Hey everybody, this is Brett. Today is August 20th and welcome back to the show. What you're going to hear today is an audio capture of a unique opportunity that presented itself last week. I am still in Connecticut and I'm going to be here for at least a couple more weeks. Rich and I were asked to co-host a live call-in show on the Logos Radio Network based down in Texas. We did this via Skype. And the name of the show was 5 Live Radio. I think they deal mostly with, you know, current events, kind of like maybe a free talk lifestyle show. So we started there and we were able to expand it out to cover some things that I think were really important and helpful. And also to introduce ourselves and each of our respective missions to a brand new audience. So this was very cool. A couple of mistakes that I made. I was talking about what I referred to as the Deer Creek High School drug raid that happened about 10 years ago. It was actually Goose Creek, South Carolina. Deer Creek, from what I can gather, is a conference center in Ohio. So where the f*** did that come from, right? Yeah, more stuff is coming soon. I've got a history show right around the corner that I'm currently editing. We recorded it live last Friday. Kevin Cole was my co-host. And we're not doing any specific history topic. What we're doing is we're discussing research methods and challenges, historiography, and historicity. If you're unfamiliar with some of those terms, you'll find out what they all mean in the next show. So more stuff coming soon. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the work I've done while I've been on the road. I've enjoyed being on the road. It's inspired me to do a country music album. Those guys are always on the road, you know? Seems like. Actually, maybe I'm just thinking of one song by Bob Seger, and it's not country. All right. Well, maybe I'll do a rap album instead. Okay, everyone. Have a good day.
Good evening and welcome. This is Richard Grove sitting in for Cody and CJ on 5 Live on the Logos Radio Network. It is Wednesday, August 14th, 2013. And joining me in studio for tonight's two-hour session is Brett Vinat, host of something called the School Sucks Podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Brett?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Rich, good to be here. And School Sucks Podcast is a YouTube channel, a call-in show, and a web community where we try to take that word education back from the indoctrinators and redefine it for what it really is, a lifelong process of self-directed learning.
Oh, learning. Well, that's why we're all here tonight. I think everyone who listens to this network is about learning and autonomy, self-reliance, self-confidence, self-esteem, coming through, becoming familiar with our environment. And that's why we're all listening to some program like this. I happen to host a podcast called The Peace Revolution and a video series called History, So It Doesn't Repeat. I've also produced a video series with John Taylor Gatto called The Ultimate History Lesson. And my homepage is tragedyandhope.com. Brett, what's your webpage?
SchoolSucksProject.com.
All right. So I enjoyed listening to Liberty Beat with John Bush. I'm a first-time guest host on this network, but long-time listener. What about yourself, Brett?
First-time guest hosting here as well. I'm excited.
But you do host a show every Thursday night, a live show, so this isn't a new metaphor for you.
No. I do have some familiarity with live radio. It's nice to not have to worry about video cameras tonight, actually.
Well, and I'm glad that CJ and Cody got a couple weeks off so that they can get some more wind under their wings and refresh themselves. And I enjoy the opportunity to just discuss some of the news that we've seen today and different perspectives and how it plays in and ties into anyone who could be listening. We're all individuals just struggling to survive out there. And to do that, we have to take stock in the situation that is reality. And to do that, we have to sift through the raw material we call news, but we also have to juxtapose that to logic and actually processing that information. And that's an example we're going to start off with tonight. Brett, you've got an article there to share?
Sure, yeah. Well, I'm always looking for ways to connect what's going on in the world currently to what I believe is one of the most important issues that I would like to see people talking about more, and that's the government schools versus, as I mentioned before, real education. So John Dewey, the famous education reformer, once said at the turn of the last century, as he was laying out what the purposes were of the government school system, one of his claims was that it was to make good citizens.
Really?
And well, unfortunately.
What's a citizen?
Yeah. See, there's some words in there that need to be defined.
Hmm.
What is good? Hmm. Good in whose eyes?
Good for who?
Exactly.
Qui bono? Who benefits from that goodness?
Indeed. So that being said, the schools have been kind of a warming up ground for some of the things that eventually show up in the adult world.
An incremental indoctrination, if you will. And famously, once upon a time, I interviewed Brett for a film years ago. Actually, I co-interviewed you. And you told this joke. And you said, what's the difference between the mafia and the government? And I said, I don't know. What? Do you remember the answer?
Yeah, the mafia doesn't have a 12-year program to convince young, impressionable people that it's not organized crime. Government does have the advantage of such a program. So
where'd this article originate today? Where'd you find it?
Sure. LouRockwell.com. It was written by John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, and it was published on Lou Rockwell yesterday. So I just wanted to start out with a couple paragraphs here, and then I think we can get into some of the finer details of this. Once upon a time in America, parents breathed a sigh of relief when their kids went back to school after a summer's hiatus, content in the knowledge that for a good portion of the day, their kids would be gainfully occupied, out of harm's way, and out of trouble. Those were the good old days, before school shootings became part of our national lexicon, and schools aiming for greater security transformed themselves into quasi-prisons, complete with surveillance cameras, metal detectors, police patrols, zero-tolerance policies, lockdowns, drug-sniffing dogs, and strip searches. That's a lot going on. Unfortunately, somewhere along the way, instead of making the schools safer, we simply managed to make them more authoritarian. It used to be that if you talked back to a teacher or played a prank on a classmate or just failed to do your homework, you might find yourself in detention or doing an extra writing assignment after school. Nowadays, students are not only being punished for transgressions more minor than those, such as playing cops and robbers on the playground, bringing Legos to school, or having a food fight, but they are being punished with suspension, expulsion, or even arrest.
Hmm. Okay, before we go on, who's the author of this great article?
John Whitehead.
John Whitehead, and it was posted on LouRockwell.com. Well, that was some hefty verbiage there. Do you want to help to dissolve some of that and make it understandable for folks listening at home?
Well, I think, first of all, what's worth pointing out is that if people are, you know, concerned with what's going on in the adult world, as I hinted at before, you know, like what might be coming down the pipeline, what are they going to roll out for the adult society in a few years? I say have a look at what's going on in the schools right now, because, of course, it's not, you know, a new development that kids in the schools are really being taught, even if it's never explicit, that they don't really have rights, they really can't advocate for themselves in any effective way. And that is, unfortunately, becoming training for citizenship.
If we were Generation X, does that make them Generation Z? Because it's been a couple, you know, there's a generation in between us and them. What you're seeing is it's almost the end. It's the end of the line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because they're coming out of the production line of schooling so unaware of their surroundings that they're almost 100% dependent and thus 100% subservient to the authority, which makes them very much stimulus response operant conditioning creatures. That's the future we're looking at. And by learning our way out of this, maybe we can communicate some other people and end those production lines. It's like another brick in the wall. We want to stop that conveyor belt that's converting people into, you know, cybernetized beings trapped in a smart grid.
Yeah. And another brick in the wall.
A technocracy, yeah.
You know, that's 30 years ago in another country. And that's another thing that I think is important to enter into the record here. The schools being used this way, this is not a current event. You know, this is something that has been going on for a long time. And the ideas of behaviorism and operant conditioning, I mean, that goes back, you know, before Pavlov to Wilhelm Wundt and over 100 years ago. And this idea has been creeping into the schools over the course of a century when people have realized how effective it is as a means of control.
How does it creep? How does it creep? I picture it like some ivy that's just like wiggling its way through the bricks in the schools and like, and, you know, chipping out the mortar that is the self-reliance between the blocks, and it's like the blocks are going to fall down soon.
Well, I mean, I guess there is some bricks that are, you know, put in place with the brick walls, I should say, put in place with the intention of growing ivy on them.
Okay, so let me be more literal.
Okay.
How did the Prussian education system that you're referring to get to America?
Yeah, that's what I was hinting at. I was going to say that the system was corrupt in many ways and a disservice to the individual and to volition in many ways right from the beginning. And there are some people who will say, looking at the schools in the last 30 years, oh, what has happened? This is so different from when I was a child. And I've heard Charlotte Isserby say we have the best education system in the world. I've heard that echoed by public school teachers who are a little, maybe a couple years younger than her, but were educated in the 50s and 60s.
I think Isserby meant in the past, at one point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, not now, because she wrote Deliberate Dumbing Down of American.
Yeah, sure. Education. But what she was talking about was developments that had happened in the past 30 years. So I heard other people who were educated back in the 1960s say the same thing. It used to be different. So I've received some criticism about stressing this Prussian model thing because they say, no, I went to public school and I get a great education. But the more you learn about the Prussian system, most of the people that I talked to didn't know anything about the Prussian origins of our education system.
Could you explain the Prussian education system in 3 minutes?
Prussia was a kingdom in the middle of Central Europe almost 200 years ago. They were getting kicked around a little bit by Napoleon's army, and they had sort of imperial designs on Central and Western Europe, even though they were relatively small, but very militaristic kingdom. And the intellectuals and the ruling class in Prussia essentially set up a system where they could inculcate the idea of nationalism. Because it doesn't make any sense if you're standing in a field and people are shooting at you and you consider yourself an individual, well, you run. That's common sense. But if you can be put into this, you know, picture of something larger, you know, you are serving a greater good, a greater cause. This was a very catchy and turned out to be a very popular idea. Throughout the 1800s and the 1900s, and right up to the present day in this country, the idea of nationalism or patriotism, the nobility of sacrifice.
They use the schooling system to separate the individual from him or herself and make it a subject or a serf of the state?
Pretty much, yeah. Mm. Now, what happens to Prussia? Well, you know, Prussia geographically is close to Eastern Europe and Poland today, and it kind of spread out through those territories in, you know, a way we wouldn't recognize today. But, you know, this was an education system that was replicated throughout Central Europe, eventually through Western Europe, and eventually by the 1850s in the United States. Well, if we consider where it started, what happened to that region by, you know, the 1920s, the 1930s? It was Germany, you know? And after six generations of young people being educated in this system that stripped them of their individuality, that encouraged them to, you know, forsake their volition in favor of the needs of the ruling class. Well, they didn't say in favor of the needs of the ruling class. They said it's your national duty in favor of the nation.
But the ruling class sits on the other side of this idea called the state that some people believe in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got
absolutely.
It. Okay.
So when Horace Mann, who was the father of American education, brought this system to America in the 1850s, he said, oh, yeah, it looks bad, right? They're using it for all this authoritarian control, but this is America, you know? So we're just going to use it, quote, in furtherance of Republican institutions. So 160 years later, we can assess how that worked out.
Well, what do you think has happened differently in America that didn't happen that led up, you know, in Germany that led up to the Nazis? Like, how do we say that we've had the same type of education system and we're not on the same track? Is there an argument for that?
I think the other thing is that, you know, Germany had all of these horrific events in the 1930s. And you can really, it would be a long time before something could happen that explicitly and that similarly again. So it doesn't mean that philosophically, educationally, politically, we're not seeing a lot of the same trends. It's just, it's not going to look exactly the same here as it did there.
Right on. You're listening to Rich and Brett co-hosting, guest for the Five Live radio show on the Logos Radio Network. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. Welcome back to Five Live Radio. This is Richard Grove, and Brett Vinat and I are sitting in for Cody Hess and CJ Gore. I hope that you enjoyed the first segment. What we started out with was an article which led us into some history. And I know that since Cody is a history student and CJ had attended the Bilderberg conference in his past, this history is going to become very interesting, because the history that affects our public schooling is not disconnected from the history that affects the working groups like the Bilderberg group, the Trilateral group, the Council on Foreign Relations. And those all stem from the last will and testament of Cecil Rhodes, which I had never heard of until I started looking into history. When did you first hear about the connections of the tax-free foundations and Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan money being used against public schooling?
You know, this is actually a pretty recent development for me as I've continued to learn more about this. I mean, when I started the show, I was really focused on the Prussian education system. But then it makes sense. When you have a system like this that is compulsory attendance, so kids have to go, you know, and funded through coercion, i.e. property tax, well, there's going to be a big long line of people waiting to get their hands on that. And all throughout the 20th century, as the system developed, we saw, you know, everyone from the Ku Klux Klan to UNESCO basically want to grab the reins and control it and use it for their own agenda. So I think that the system, just like the Prussian system, lends itself to being even more corruptible as far as, you know, taking real education out of schools. The structure of the system itself being, you know, compulsory in attendance and compulsory as far as the funding methods are concerned, well, that lends itself to even more corruption because there's far less of a chance of escaping it.
So the article that you read, the police state mindset in our public schools, let's reverse engineer from the situation that we see today. Where
sure.
We have metal detectors and security systems and security guards, hopefully in schools, if you know these sort of things are happening. But why aren't teachers armed? Why aren't students armed? Why do we create gun-free zones and then be surprised when something like that happens? I mean, why wasn't our school system like that, let's say, in the 1950s? What has changed since then, and what justifications, if those aren't enough questions for you to answer, what justifications are behind this uber security state?
Well, I think it only takes one or two really traumatic events to push this, and the most significant one in our lifetime, anyway, maybe prior to Sandy Hook, would have been Columbine. Columbine was basically 9/11 for kids as far as the impact that it had on that theater of society, the schools. So that's when you see everything starting to change. That's when there's more talk about security checks and, you know, even things that go beyond shooting threats. We have the Deer Creek drug raid, where students were forced to lie down on the floor while armed guards went through their school and pointed guns at them. And you
so
know,
it's like conditioning or predictive programming.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's what we were getting at, too, in the first segment, that, you know, these are things, those kids grow up and they become adults and they have a context into which they can put the things they're seeing today, like at the airport.
People being docile.
Yeah.
People not resisting.
Right.
People not asserting their rights and just acquiescing and saying, well, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter. Well, it seems like I'm picking up on a pattern here.
Okay.
Chaos is created. And a loss of rights then ensue, whether it's Oklahoma City mm-hmm. back in 1995, 9/11, another great example. This you know, creation of chaos creates cognitive dissent, people trying to understand it. Some people can't. They then get pathologized as, you know, as dissenting. They pathologize the dissent in our society. It's no longer speaking out or being someone who has parhesia and free speaking abilities. It is now pathologized as, what is the disorder in the DSM? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oppositional defiant
disorder. Yeah. And so, you know, these are all symptoms of our society. And in looking into the root causes, it's like the story that you read today, that's a symptom. And in there, somewhere, it leads to the root causes. One of the root causes you've identified in your show is the Prussian education system, which is, in long story short, it is a way not to educate an individual, but to stimulus response condition an individual very much like an animal.
Yeah.
To repetitively, you know, repetitively do certain, you know, tactics or topics or actions in their job. You know, to be able to, you know, repeat without thinking.
Sure.
To act like a parrot. I think the Latin word is citta, citticism. To take on without being conscious and repeat it.
Mm.
Right? So if that's what the school system is churning out, is that the end goal? They just want to make people dumber? Or are they making people dumber because then they can, you know, conduct an agenda that otherwise goes unseen and undetected by most people, especially people who don't listen to the Logos Radio Network?
Sure. Well, and remember, too, that we have to, as we're trying to present these new ideas to everybody else, it's hard to do that without them seeing the depth and the breadth of the research that certainly you and I have done on these subjects. Because when you hand them conclusions and it's just completely disconnected from their reality, that's a very, very difficult time. And these emotional arguments have such great power, especially if all of that research and logic work hasn't been done as far as the removal of contradictions and the making of important connections, then you could say, well, look at this police state situation in the schools. And the counterargument is, well, because Columbine, well, because Sandy Hook. You say, look at the condition of our airports or the stop and frisk on the streets of New York City. People say, well, 9/11. Those events carry such a great emotional weight that if people haven't, you know, counterbalanced. I mean, we all have emotions. Emotions are a part of life. There's nothing wrong with, emotion is a part of our thinking. There's nothing wrong with that. It's nothing to be ashamed about.
It's how we think about, it's how we feel about our thoughts. Actually.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
What emotion is.
Absolutely. So when that's not properly counterbalanced with understanding of what really exists around us, then the emotional arguments are obviously going to win because, you know, people have a need to make meaning out of this complex and confusing world that's going on around us all the time.
So let me just ask a question. Let me just pose a hypothetical.
Yeah.
What if, a certain group of people found it beneficial to them and their agenda to provide us with false information, psychological warfare, that which we've studied over the past 20th century and the 21st century thus far. I mean, every piece of media that's out there has been highly engineered. At least in the corporate world that we've grown up with, that, you know, we've been inundated with in culture. Mm-hmm. So what happens when they start hiding factual data from us and we start consuming non-factual data and treating that like truth? What would happen to the direction of this country?
Certainly mass confusion masquerading as knowledge, because that's what I was saying about people have this need to make meaning out of the world around them, which is complex and confusing. I mean, even if we just want to go back to an event like Sandy Hook, there's a myriad of questions about what happened at Sandy Hook when people want to make that meaning, because they don't like that open hole where knowledge should be, right? It's unsettling. So they're either going to accept, regardless of what the event is that we're talking about, a very compelling, even if it's shallow, conspiracy theory, or the official story, you know? And the truth usually requires more work than either one of those options.
Absolutely. The truth requires more observation, more digging. It's not easy. It's not going to be in a soundbite. It's not going to be in the official story, and it's not going to be in the first conspiracy theory that you see when you Google the thing.
Absolutely. Well, here's the problem, though, Rich. What have we learned about work? You know, from our 15,000 hours spent in government schools. It's not something that a lot of people like to do if they can avoid it. So prepackaged answers can be very attractive sometimes.
It can be, and we all have, a life to live. And so I think when we come back from the next break, we should talk about, you know, how to organize our lives such that we actually have the time to do the learning that we need to catch up, because I think that's something that benefits individuals. And I think it helps release that helplessness feeling, because you can start to grasp and be organized in your life. So right now, we'll be right back. And this is the 5 Live Radio Show on the Logos Radio Network. Welcome back to 5 Live Radio on the Logos Radio Network. I am your guest host, Richard Grove, and I have a co-guest host, Brett Finot, here. We were just about to talk about learning basic skills of getting organized so that we can actually take the time we need to fill in the gaps in our history and to educate ourselves out of the status quo, to outgrow the status quo, if you will.
Sure.
So what do you use? Do you use any particular method or system? How are you organized enough to have a show and be productive and to create things and to go from someone who listened to podcasts once upon a time to, you know, saying, oh, that's something I can learn myself how to do. And it's not the same for everyone, but it's just a skill that we share in common.
Well, I mean, simply put, and there are names for this method, you find the pieces that are relevant to what you're doing, and then you figure out how they work together, and then you have a total picture. And not only do you understand, you know, the components of that, how that those components work together, you can also communicate that information to other people. So another thing, as far as my realization, my growing up in this respect, and these were skills that I did not pick up in school or college, I would listen
to people. Isn't that ironic? I mean, these are basic skills. It's the first thing you need to do to learn anything else, to make time in your schedule to learn it.
Yeah. I would listen to people talk, you know, give presentations, and I would stop, you know, like if I was listening to a piece of audio or something, I would stop and I would say, I don't like this. I don't like the way this sounds. I don't agree with this. But I would have a real difficult time taking apart the person's arguments. And what I eventually realized is that they were, you know, kind of like shooting past me. I was like a bad goalie for their jargon. I wouldn't know what the pieces were. So when they put all the pieces together, I would say, yeah, that looks good. But didn't take it apart and say, okay, what does this really mean? Like when we read that John Dewey quote, school is to make good citizens. If you don't think about that, who could argue with that? Citizenship is good. We learn that in school. Good is definitely good. It's the same word. That sounds nice. But when you think about good for who and what is citizenship, well, now you've created a learning opportunity for yourself.
Well, and if you haven't had time to figure out your life and organize and do, you know, fill in these blind spots that we're all kind of programmed with through the education system, then it's likely that all that stuff's going to slip by. You haven't thought through citizenship and what's the process of converting an individual into a citizen that serves a state. Yeah. That's the Prussian education system. But right. It's now just ubiquitous in our culture that, oh, everyone's just a citizen. No, we're individuals. We're human beings. We have a lot of things in common. Divide and conquer is the number one tactic that's been used against human beings throughout time. It's been a battle of consciousness, you know, expression, and it's being suppressed by people who want to exterminate consciousness on this planet for purposes of control. When they exterminate consciousness and imagination, then they control you through stimulus response. And so, again, we go through a lot of our lives being disorganized and tolerating things around us called stuff.
Yeah.
Right? But I found the power was in questioning the stuff and actually finding, you know, what is it? You get the identity. And then once you have the identity, it's like, well, is it where it's supposed to be or is it completed or what needs to be completed? You ask another set of questions and then you go through a process and then you get to completion and that feels good.
Yeah.
And that's a repetitive process of input, processing, and output, starting with your five senses and the law of identity. So tying back to an idea like philosophy, you can have a philosophy that serves your life instead of a philosophy or an absence of philosophy that makes us into servants, right? And I think that's what a lot of people on, you know, at least listening to this show, are trying to do. They're trying to outgrow this. I see it like the strings that held Gulliver down. It's not one big rope that we have to cut. We have to unlearn all these little ideas that we took as knowledge, but really we didn't attain that knowledge through questions. We attained it through listening to someone else's declarative sentences. And I've found that most declarative sentences that we've been taught are inaccurate. And they're inaccurate not on accident, but to create us as docile, malleable, very easily influenced and controlled human resources.
Yeah, absolutely. It was in a lot of these things were prepackaged. Almost like, here's the gift of knowledge. You don't need to open it, right? Just know that that's what it is. So let's take what you're saying and bring the citizen word and the citizenship example back into it. Well, people use that in a declarative sentence like, I'm a good citizen, or you have to be a good citizen, as if that already has some kind of meaning that's just like, is it positive or negative? Is it good or bad? Well, it's good. So let's move on. I'm a good citizen. Now, if you go a step further, like the first thing you would do is define that. What is citizenship? What does that mean? Well, when you learn that citizenship is you owe a duty of allegiance to a government in exchange for their obligation to protect you. Now, that's an interesting relationship. So then you would go a step further and you'd say, well, does that definition hold up? Has it been put to the test at all?
Sure.
Then you learn more and you see Supreme Court decisions where people have created class action legal cases against the government for the failure to protect. In a variety, I can think of Hurricane Katrina, I can think of 9/11, I can think of ones that predate both of those events. And the Supreme Court finds, we don't have an obligation to protect you. But you just remember that allegiance part, you know? So that kind of falls apart as a concept.
Well, and again, I think it goes into the fact that most human beings in America spend their habitual time doing things that are in direct conflict to their needs as survival. One of the needs as for survival is to understand what is this nature of government? What is the nature of citizenship? What are the details that you should be familiar with? And one of them is it's not the government's job to protect us. It's the government's job to protect our rights. And now what you see today, not only in the article that you started with about police state, mindset in our public schools, that they're creating future generations that is like all these things that we, I don't know, we grew up with a lot of ideas that actually reflected things that went on. Those have just been muddied in the last 30 or 40 years by our domestic and foreign policy. Mm-hmm. But we were taught that America was supposed to be about equal rights for human beings. Now, there were contradictions. They still had slavery back then, right? So even these guys who were writing down these documents, I don't ever think that they, you know, anyone should see them as perfect, but they were people who were trying to create something that was somewhat unique as juxtaposed to the empire, of Britain.
Yep.
And fighting for independence and being self-reliant and being able to carve out a life here in America.
Mm-hmm.
I don't admire the history of the genocides and the things that went on in this country. But that stuff is in the past. We need to actually, not throw all that away. We have learned some things in the past 200 years, and all the things that we've learned are kind of being swept under the rug. So the credible education that we could have had is blocked out. We get busy with life. We don't know how to manage our life and be organized and actually get through and answer, get through the confusion, execute the steps take that you need to take to solve problems. And I think that leaves a lot of us in a recurring loop where you don't have the time to pick your head up and actually see what's going on.
Absolutely.
So the next thing that that I would think ties into that is once you figure out how to get organized and you can actually get something done is how to process all this raw data. Because, we have access to the internet. We have the ability to ask a question into that little Google or smart start page,
mm-hmm.
And get answers or at least leads on information. And I think there's a serious process that's neglected through our education system that prevents people from processing the data in a useful way, from getting meaning from it, and from truly getting any grasp on understanding that is available if you know how to process the data.
Yeah. Well, again, that's work. And what happens in school is it's hard to understand why anything is important.
They condition us to think that thinking is work. That's one of the things. Homework, all those things. People have almost an emotional reaction to it, the thought of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thought of thinking brings about anxiety for people.
Absolutely. So what is the shortest cut that I can take through all of this potential work? So if the processing step, I understand that people are busy and people want to focus on their children and their own lives and their jobs. And there's a lot of things going on around them that they just, I don't have time for that. Somebody just explain it to me. Tell me how I should feel about this so I can sound somewhat competent in a conversation, but I can't look into it myself. So they might take this prepackaged definition, like we said, with citizenship. They skip the processing and, their translation of it or their communication of it to their children or to other people is just repeating what they heard on television or from somebody who was basically trying to trick them.
Well, I think that's the next thing we should break down after this break is how to do it step by step originally so you can have a unique perspective in the world.
Sounds good.
Welcome back to 5 Live Radio on the Logos Radio Network. All right, right before the break, Brett and I were discussing not only how to make time in your schedule to learn new things, but the actuality, the step-by-step method. We teased you with it right before the break, hoping you're going to keep listening. The step-by-step actuality of actually observing, collecting that observation, removing the contradictions, and getting to something we like to call knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's very useful. Social currency. I think it's better than Bitcoin. Knowledge and wisdom leads to understanding.
I agree.
Can't be a bad thing. And it works without electricity. You can give away as much as you want. No one can ever steal it. I'm just pitching my new social currency.
The great news is that, unlike Bitcoin, this is the natural process of the mind. And I think that one of the reasons why people overlook this is because it's never really been defined and laid out for them explicitly.
And it's so simple. But yeah. We all use it implicitly.
Sure.
The brilliance is in attaching some useful words and making it explicit so that we can use it consistently in our lives.
Yeah, and we're using it to solve problems all the time, little problems. Unfortunately, it seems like when we're dealing with these really big problems, these complex events and issues and ideas, we are accepting things, again, prepackaged or even, you know, this...
But Brett,
yeah.
Thinking is work. We already talked about that. Big problem, complex, anxiety, fear, confusion, frustration. I get all these words that come into my head when it's big problem. I mean, I guess it's the inconsistent use of the method that brings about issues in your life, because when you forget to use it and you start doing something trial and error,
yeah,
instead of just going through a method that you can use for all these different problems, you can get caught up in the moment, and that would lead to an emotional response, which shuts off the thinking part of your brain and puts you into a fight or flight stimulus response. So you're just back where you started.
Yeah.
So really, I guess it's about, once you know that there is an explicit method that you can use and you're using it successfully, I think you'll see that the consistent use of it and making that a habit is one of the biggest solutions that's out there that nobody really, well, too few people talk about. I mean, the people that we work with, Corbett Report, Gnostic Media, Red Ice Radio, What on Earth is Happening with Mark Passio, and the people that you work with, I think that's common knowledge. I just, you know, I feel like we're preaching to the choir to some extent, and that we need to, if we're going to do this, provide the tools so that the choir can actually communicate with the congregation. And that's
Absolutely.
What we're always trying to do anyway.
Yeah, and I think that one of the problems is people who use this process all the time, and I know of in my own life some wonderful minds, some people who have, you know, tremendous talents in certain areas. I'm always encouraging them when we're talking about certain issues, like, can you think a little more here? I know, you know, you definitely have the skills to shake off CNN and Fox News and politicians' rhetoric.
We just have to make it trendy. How can we make it cool? Maybe we should have a contest or something like that, how to make knowledge and being smart cool again.
Well, I think you pointed out before, we are making it cool.
I feel
pretty cool right now.
I am pretty cool right now.
Yeah.
I think anyone listening to this is super cool right now. And I think this is a great episode that you can pass around to your friends and family, because maybe it's just the right tempo, maybe it's just the right speed to give them a little information and then, you know, also entertain them along the way. So digging back into this article that we had started out with.
Sure.
Let's use this method to assess that situation, and then people can, you know, observe that and do likewise in their own lives.
All right. So the summary is essentially presenting as a current event that schools, ostensibly anyway, in an effort to better secure the safety of the students, have turned into these quasi-prison mini police states.
So the police state mindset in our public school system has to do with the police state. I followed you that far. Read me the last paragraph. I'm a guy with not too much time. I'm busy. What's the last paragraph say?
And we respect your time, people.
That's why
listening.
I'm doing this.
Yeah.
It
has been said that America's schools are the training ground for future generations. If so, and unless we can do something to rein in this runaway train, this next generation will be the most compliant, fearful, and oppressed generation ever to come of age in America. And they will be marching in lockstep with the police state.
So he's saying it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
If we don't make it better.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's make it better. The school system, we've reported, has been corrupted. And as a result, we've all served our 15,000 hours in that public school system. Most people listening have gone to public school.
Mm-hmm.
And now we need to uncondition ourselves. I don't like the term unschooling, but that's, you know, we have to uneducate ourselves of the erroneous facts that are not facts.
Sure.
One of the things that I see that they've taken out of our public schooling education is critical thinking. Another would be the active literacies, the ability to speak or write or create media in order to communicate your perspective. Even the creation of art would be part of the active literacies. Voluntary communication, the use of non-obligatory words, and the absence of punishment and reward in our schooling. Those things are just, it's noticeable, and it shows in our very militant society. So what I see, and again, how to manage your time and how to get things done. So without these basic skills provided to hundreds of millions of individuals in this country, I'm surprised it's not more chaotic than what it is. I mean, in looking at the videos that Mark Dice churns out, I call it the dumbometer, mm-hmm. and it's getting dumber out there. And every time I watch, I can't believe. And he's not just selectively, you know, going to some place that has no contact with reality. He's not out on some island of people that have no contact with the Western world. He's in the middle, you know, he's in San Diego, he's in California, and he's on the boardwalk. And here's these people that don't care about privacy, don't care about anything, and yet they're all paying taxes into a system, and they have no idea where those tax dollars are you know, going or being used for, or, you know, who's benefiting from their ignorance.
Right.
And so when the school system is, it's an assembly line for ignorance. And as it continues to churn out more and more ignorant people, I can't help but not just be afraid for, you know, my family, my friends, my coworkers, my country. I'm afraid for the human species. I'm afraid that people are going to be so dumb that we're going to wipe ourselves out. It's not going to be a meteor or, you know, aliens from out there. I mean, people get just a little bit dumber. It's just like the Mike Judge movie. It's just like Idiocracy. I mean, the Windows 8 operating system looks like the, you know, the thing when he goes to the doctor in the movie. When Luke Wilson goes to the doctor, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, so like, if that's not 100 or 400 years in the future, that's right now. You're seeing what he was making fun of. I mean, that was just like 10 years ago he made that film. And already it's manifested in such a virulent form that it's hard to discern the difference between the Idiocracy and the reality.
Well, I think there's another way to look at this, too, and it's a broader picture. And
let's go with the positive picture.
Well,
cheer people up.
Oh, man, it's going to be hard. Knowing this, I think, having this information...
Play the good cop. I'll be the bad cop. I've got all the facts on the crappy situation that's going on. And you tell us how to frame it in a solution mindset.
Well, I think, first of all, is understanding that, you know, this is a trend in the trends and forces theory of history. That as the force is the society closing, becoming more totalitarian and more socialist and really
collectivist.
More collectivist. And if you look at most states in the world right now, economically, they're moving towards communism and socially, they're moving towards fascism. And they move at different speeds because, you know, somebody might be in the, you know, Norway right now saying that's not true. But, you know, the United States.
There's
and they
lots of people in Norway right now. One of them might be listening.
Hello, Norway.
Hello.
But at different times, they move at different speeds. So when this starts to happen, you know, it's not always easy to see it happening. But right now, I think we're in this time in the United States where people are becoming more aware of this. And as we've seen states move this way, like if you look at the life of a state, you know, from beginning to end, very rarely would any self-respecting historian say, boy, that really just moved in the right direction as far as, you know, humanity was concerned the entire time.
I'll throw down a book reference for that, Evolution of Civilizations by Carol Quigley, where he shows the different stages and the repetition through history.
Absolutely. I think that's very important. But as a society closes, you see that as more function is given to the government and less autonomy is in the hands of the individual, well, you get this perception of mass helplessness. And that's not just physical helplessness, like we see in the television debate over, you know, Sandy Hook, like where is it the government's responsibility to protect us or is it my responsibility to protect myself? That's skipped over, and it's just the debate is how will the government protect us?
What they're doing is dumbing down the population. That's definitely one thing that
you're
they're
right.
doing.
It's also,
and I think that's been done through history. If you check into the Roman population right about the fall of Rome, people weren't as smart and as diligent and as hardworking.
Absolutely.
You know, there was corruption that people were being plundered from, is what I'm saying. The hardworking people were there, but they were being... they had parasites.
So it's not just actual physical helplessness. It's intellectual helplessness.
It's learned helplessness.
And people, absolutely. And people become more dependent on the quote-unquote experts or...
establishment or authority or state.
Yeah, or soothsayers, if you want to go back in time.
Well, and I think the article about police state in the public school system ties into that heavily because it's showing the symptoms. It's showing the symptoms. And what we're going to do is we're going to break it down by analyzing some of the keywords, and then we're going to have to think about out loud some of the history that we've had to learn about the keywords that are in there.
Sure.
And then we can understand the logic of why it's going that way, where it's going, and, hopefully how to learn our way out of it.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, what you're seeing right here, like I said before, it's not a current event, and it's really just a conclusion. And this is the trick. When you try to present somebody a conclusion, you know, you're just giving them the absolute buffer. And behind that is all your time and all your hard work and all the knowledge that's been accumulated. But if all they see is what appears to be an opinion bumping up against them, that's when they have that emotional reaction. So the communication is important as well, because we have to be able to, you know, let people in to see what's beyond that apparent opinion, to say, no, I'm not somebody who sits on my bed at night and thinks up ways to make people like you angry. I did my homework, you know.
Well, in the second hour, we'll also talk about how to build some bridges of logic. So bridges of empathy.
Yeah.
So we can communicate the logic across the bridge to other people. So I find this to be exciting, and I find it exciting to be able to share it with a wider audience. So
it's great to be here tonight. It's great to be doing live radio. It's always so exciting.
You're listening to 5 Live Radio. Logos Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to 5 Live Radio on the Logos Radio Network. Filling in for Cody and CJ tonight, I am Brett Vinat, host of the School Sucks podcast and creator of the School Sucks Project. With me is Richard Grove, tragedyandhope.com and host of the Peace Revolution podcast. Your credits are actually quite numerous.
Really?
Yeah.
Not aware of that.
State of Mind?
Oh, yeah. We did do a recent film called State of Mind, The Psychology of Control. It's an excellent film that touches on many of the subjects that, the schooling article that we were discussing. But basically, if you're walking around in the United States or in any country with an imaginary line around the world, and you're subject to statism and some of these other infectious ideas of our educational culture, the Prussian education system, then you will find it a fascinating tour through history with some meaningful solutions at the end. And then after the movie, you can always go to tragedyandhope.com and dip into the copious cornucopia of work that we produce that's all about personal freedom, individual liberty, autonomy, these sorts of ideas and the tool sets that you need or, you know, would make it easier. You don't need them. It's all voluntary. Check it out if you want.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be spoon-feeding you plugs here, but the film that you made before that might actually provide a pretty decent framework for State of Mind if people check that out first.
That would be, I can answer this question, it is the ultimate history lesson with a fellow named John Taylor Gatto, and it is a 5-hour interview where I sat down with him with an outline, and I kind of set aside the outline. We had an interactive conversation that takes, again, a tour through American history with the undercurrent of education, and when you find out the origins and nature and form and function, and you find out it's the antithesis of that which we need as individuals to survive and have personal liberty and cognitive liberty in the world, then you want to find out, well, what do I need to do to get out? Well, John also drops that in there. He says, hey, here's what they teach the kids at the elite private schools like Eton and Les Roses. You know, here's what they're schooling kings. Here's what they teach them about human relations and how to talk to people and the active literacies, how to express yourself, but also about observation, identification, organization prior to your communication.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things about not just the ultimate history lesson, but the book, The Underground History of American Education, that Gatto wrote.
The magnum opus. Yeah.
Absolutely. But what you see in that book is this chronology of all these different interest groups who tried to seize control of government schooling in America. And what you wind up with is this just huge cluster of all these competing interests, at the bottom of which is the children.
And now I think people are just slowly and surely waking up, you know, that are on like the corporate level, the corporate frequency, let's call it.
Yeah.
You know, people who obviously listen to this have woken up and they're looking for information and they're making it a habit. It's not just a hit and run type thing. They're serious about it. They take notes. They listen and they learn and they look things up and they grow from it. So I think as more and more of us demonstrate our change in habits, our friends and family are like, well, where'd you get this information? Where can I learn something like that? Because they're not getting it from the History Channel anymore. They're not getting it from the Discovery Channel anymore. They're not getting it from any of these channels, you know, that are supposed to be about learning. They're not about learning anymore.
Okay, so you're saying that the real story has nothing to do with monsters.
Or aliens or Bigfoots.
Or aliens building the pyramids. Or shows where people compete with each other making cakes.
Right.
All right. So the History Channel and the Discovery Channel are out.
you know,
as far as research.
And I only know those things because I do have an interest in humanity. Mm-hmm. And that is like that's the metadata that they're putting out right now. It's like I know that billions of people are being exposed to that type of content. So if you want to continue to build constructive bridges of empathy with people, especially your friends and family, that's what means the most in life. You need to be able to speak to them in their language. And not just your, you know, researcher language from reading books and, you know, this sort of thing. So you have to be able to connect it back.
Yeah.
And relate to them and enjoy situations sometimes when you can't share information with them because it's not the right time, you know, and pick and choose your battles. What's really important that if you're going to communicate with your friends and family, what is the most important thing that you can have them understand? For some, it might be, hey, the difference between fact and fiction, because once people figure that out, they figure out right and wrong. They figure out, you know, illusion, and they can discern it from reality. They can really liberate themselves from some powerful parasitic beliefs.
Yeah, we might
have
to go
back. Some of those beliefs might be authority. I don't know.
We might have to go back and really clarify that there is a difference between fact and fiction. There is such a thing
called truth.
As truth.
And it applies to everybody equally.
Yeah, because that's kind of, at least in the last 100 years, with some of the philosophical infections that have come into this country.
And it means...
kind of a wash.
I've memorized this. It means that which has actually occurred.
Right. Right.
Or is occurring.
I want to throw this out as well. Phone number here is 1-512-646-1984. If you think you have something to contribute to this conversation, feel free to give us a call and join in.
Or if you've read the book 1984.
Sure.
Because that ties back into that school article. It's an Orwellian society. I mean, it's not even, you know... I have a t-shirt from like 10 years ago, or it's from 2004, so it's 9 years ago. It's got a picture of George Bush, and then underneath it says 1984, 20 years later, or 20 years too late.
Yeah.
I blew the punchline. But the point is, this isn't even new. Like today, people are waking up to this about Snowden and NSA spying, and oh, you know, it's a blip on their radar. They don't change their habits. But this has been incrementally being ratcheted up over the past 30 years. There's been a lot of evidence of it. You know, like I said, 2004, going back into the 90s, going all the way back to 1974. And then you can see the planning of it prior to that. And before that, you can see where they dissembled our education system. And prior to that, you can see where they infiltrated our country with foreign central bankers.
Yeah.
So it's kind of started with the banking, and then they took over statecraft, and then they took over education. And now the effects of the education are taking place where they can just pillage the country. They can have, you know, quadrillions in derivatives out there hanging over everyone's head. The national debt is ballooning, and none of us signed on to any of that. None of us consented to that. That would then mean that we're all slaves. None of us are really cool with that.
And again, this might come from a lack of clarification on that word citizenship.
Damn.
See, you really got to straighten out those terms.
Okay, you want to go with the definition? Because, you know, all good thinking starts with defining what you're talking about. Otherwise, you're talking about nothing. So let's define it. What is a citizen? How would you define a citizen in your own words?
A citizen is a person who owes a duty of allegiance to a government in exchange for that government's obligation to protect them.
That sounds very much like what's in the Oxford English Dictionary.
Indeed.
Is that where you learn it?
I believe so. I've memorized that one. But the Oxford English is a good place to start.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. I first found it useful when I was looking up, I think it was the origins of the word terrorism. I was like, well, this is a major word that's used everywhere in our culture. Let me see what the history is. And it says government by force or intimidation.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, we live under force and intimidation, our entire society. That's why people pay taxes. Like three layers of questions into any of our society, and you find somebody who's willing to point a gun at you because it's their job. And they're working on stimulus response, and they're not conscious. They don't have any conscience in them because they're not being conscious. And that's what happened to the Nazis, right? I mean, that's how the Nazis got to be the Nazis. And so I notice history repeating in our country.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of when I was a younger man who knew a lot less, and I considered myself at the time pretty liberal. I was painting houses, had the summer off from teaching, and I was listening.
What did you teach?
I taught history and math and in a film appreciation elective. I really enjoyed that as well. But I was off in the summer, and in the summer I would paint houses, and I got my first MP3 player, and I was listening to Noam Chomsky one day. And he said, to go back to that word terrorism, he said, you know, the United States is, you know, a terrorist state by its own definition. I almost fell off the ladder, you know, because that was such that was so clear. And then I was compelled to go look into terrorism and came up with a definition very similar to the one that you gave, because usually what comes with terrorism, what's all wrapped up with that, is you see turbans, you hear foreign languages, beards, box cutters, that kind of a thing. But when you really see what it is and you say, okay, well, if this is what's called terrorism, but what is terrorism really? Who else is involved? Who else fits this definition? That was an interesting learning experience that started on a ladder one day for me.
Ironically enough, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Chomsky was in the news today. Mm-hmm. And if I recall correctly, it was because it was finally disclosed that the NSA had been spying on him. So I don't know why they would want to spy on somebody who is a professor at MIT. I mean, that's like a government-funded university that does all these, you know, big rah-rah research projects. So he's a very respected, you know, particle in the establishment. Why would they do that? Why would they spy on him?
Well, I think Chomsky, and maybe this is one of the reasons why MIT, which is certainly part of the establishment, is held on to him, is that he has what we could call maybe an intellectual sex appeal, right? Like, he is a famous dissident. He has been since the 1960s, and he is certainly very, very respected by the left in this country, even though he would probably say that he's disgusted with most of it. But yeah, I mean, it would make, I mean, if you look at some of the titles of Chomsky's books and papers, you would think he is the kind of guy you would want to keep an eye on. It would almost be irresponsible of them not to be watching this 85-year-old man.
He's easily attainable. You can get him at most of the bookstores, you know, they carry him out there. But then that led me into Orwell's work, revisiting, you know, tomes of the past that might have predicted the future.
Right.
In fact, we've got some calls on the line. And the first one we're going to go to is James in Texas. He actually has a question about 1984. So I think that's a great segue. You want to go live?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello. Hey, guys.
Hi, James. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can. I hope you can hear me, too.
Oh, so, hey, James.
Hello. So less of a question about 1984, but maybe a statement is, I think too many people talk about the surveillance state when they talk about the book 1984. There was a lot more in that book than just surveillance of the people.
Well, that is an absolute truth and a great fact. And if you want to hold on through the break, we can talk more about that, because it's layer upon layer. People are just recognizing the surveillance society right now. But it's a good opportunity to show them and give them a tour of what else is in there. So if you'll hang on, we'll be right back in about 2 minutes.
Great.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to 5 Live Radio. I'm Brett Vinat, and with me is Richard Grove, and we're filling in for Cody and CJ. And we're going to go back to the phone right now, where we have James, who wanted to provide some additional information beyond the surveillance aspects of George Orwell's 1984. James, are you there?
Sure am.
All right. Go ahead, sir.
One of the things, the most critical things was, is that you remember what 1984, when it was. And it was in 1984, but it was after the people had finished the revolution. They had a revolution against the capitalist system, and 1984 was the society after they had their revolution. So I think that's a bit of a warning there, and that sometimes when you have a revolution, you end up with a system that's just as bad, if not worse, than what you had before.
Well, what do you know about George Orwell?
Well, I know he fought the communists,
He did fight the communists in the book. Is obviously, I mean, he's fighting the communists, certainly ideologically, in the book. George Orwell was a socialist who was very critical of not even communism per se, but of what had manifested in the Soviet system. So I think that's what Orwell's concern was that what they stopped using words like socialism, and they started calling it Stalinism to make sure it was differentiated from the socialism that they wanted in Western Europe.
You're saying that he's against that sort of system, or he's warning us about everything of systems of government in general?
I don't think Orwell would have really spoken out vehemently against collectivism, period. I think that
I would have to contend with that.
Okay.
Allow me to retort.
Sure.
The end of the book is what is in 2 + 2 equal? Whatever Big Brother says it is. It's about authority. It's about removing your thinking, freedom, and choice, and fusing stimulus and response together such that when you receive a stimuli, you react like a reflex without your humanness in between. And that's the type of authority that, Big Brother is trying to create in that book, from my understanding.
Of which George Orwell would have been critical. But remember that most socialists don't see socialism as like this pure authoritarianism. They think of that as greater freedom, because so many of these things that are burdensome to people are taken care of by a benevolent state, or as like anarcho-syndicalists would favor, no state at all, you know, run by networks of workers. So I think that obviously Orwell, you know, maybe if he was alive today, he'd say, yeah, okay, well, that's we can see that's where collectivism goes. I guess if I had lived a little longer, I would have seen that. But he was certainly critical of what was going on in not only Russia, but also China by then as well. But again, that it was kind of sullying the name socialism for what I think a lot of people at the time. I mean, you know, there's other people besides Orwell who are very excited, maybe not excited, but interested in the future, like H.G. Wells, who's saying the same thing.
Right. And H.G. Wells was a student of T.H. Huxley, and George Orwell was a student of Aldous Huxley. So here you have a family, a famous British family that's into eugenics and social control, and the elite upper class of society that are putting out books and media into the environment. So I think it's about discarding the messengers and studying the message in the history and juxtaposing it to what has happened. James, thank you for your call. Now, the next call we got up here says Terrence in Ohio.
Can you hear me?
We can, loud and clear. What's your question?
Well, it's not so much a question, but it's fact, evidence. Fact plus evidence equals truth. And I want to, using three methods, I guess, I don't know the words I need, but the Constitution of the United States does not require any man or woman to serve as president, congressman, or judge. It does not compel any man to perform. Therefore, all things being equal, the man performing under the Constitution has no authority upon any other man. Okay, that's just a natural law, I would suppose. The 14th Amendment states that a person born in the United States being nothing more than words on paper, a person being born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof can only be a president, a congressman, a judge, or a government employee. That's number two. Number three, Bowers versus DeVito. Read, the Constitution is a charter of negative liberty. It tells the state to leave the people alone. It does not require the state or the federal government to provide services, even so elementary a service as maintaining law and order. Therefore, there is no duty to protect. There is no reciprocal obligation upon a citizen. Therefore, there can be no citizen if the government has no duty to protect them. It's just amazing the lies that they pull upon the people and deceive the people.
So what we find is that one of the most coveted terms in our vernacular is essentially imaginary as far as its real-world application. There's
correct.
No such thing.
Well, and I think Terrence, you're referring to three different aspects that are all related together. The authority, and where does it come from, is a real question, in my opinion. You know, the government claims to have a special authority that individuals don't have, and he's noticing in his second point, the 14th Amendment, the use of words to create a straw man on paper to basically wipe out natural law, and what people would refer to in some cases as natural law. You can also see as the three main axioms of philosophy, which are the law of identity, the fact that you are conscious of existence, and existence itself. And so those are the boundaries of natural law, and that's where individuals get their human rights. And this is the basis of our culture, and these are the observations. They're almost like the preamble to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. These are the things that were assumed at that time, because at the time, people were kind of, better educated than they are now. And they didn't have an appreciation for what America could be looking like as a dumbed down country where people have forgotten and their link to these inalienable rights. You cannot put a lien on these rights. They are yours. As long as you are living and breathing and your heart is beating, you have these rights as a human being, not because you live behind some imaginary lines here in North America, but because you're a human being on this planet. And so these observations, which were becoming obvious at a time when they had just had the Renaissance and the Enlightenment, then kind of gotten, you know, they've gotten swept under the rug over the past 200 years. Terrence there gave us three specific examples on how they tie together of dehumanizing the individual to collectivize us, to create citizens, unwitting citizens, who just participate in the system generation after generation. They get the birth certificate, they get the driver's license, they get the marriage license, they have all these partnerships with this thing called the state, but they've never asked, you know, what is the state, what is their role in it, and can they voluntarily leave?
Yeah, what is my relationship to it?
Well, these are the questions that we have to ask as human beings, right?
Absolutely, we certainly do. Thank you so much, Terrence. Anything else?
Yes, I would like to add, Jefferson stated, or someone stated, the government is a necessary evil, which is really saying that there are evil men upon the earth that will attack the innocent, and there needs to be a way for the people to protect themselves from these liars and thieves, and we call this thing government. And because an individual man can't ward off or fend off the attacking masses of liars and thieves, so we want to form this government whose sole purpose is to defend life, liberty, and property. And it takes men of all men are not flawless, I suppose, but it takes men that just want to fend off the bad guys and leave everybody else alone. And our government has turned into people that think they're going to protect you by locking you in a cage.
Sure. I wonder if there was one day thousands of years ago where one liar said to one thief, have you heard about this new thing called government? We got to get in on that. It's perfect for us. It's a license to do our crimes. Terrence, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate your input. You are listening to 5 Live Radio on the Logos Radio Network, and we will be back soon. I'm Brett, and with me is Rich. We're here tonight in place of Cody and CJ. Still have time for your call if you want to make it. 512-646-1984. We'll be right back. When?
Right there.
All right. Taking some calls and kicking butt.
Cool.
Doing what we can.
When did I say back?
You said we'll be right back twice.
Well, we will be right back.
Recording all your searches and creating a massive database.
You didn't say break, though.
Certainly didn't.
But it doesn't have to be that way. Startpage.com is the world's most private search engine. Startpage doesn't store your IP address.
I like Startpage. I like Startpage.
If you don't like,
it's my Dax Shepard impression.
I like money.
I like money.
How many millions?
What's minus?
Women are more likely to marry nice guys, which might account for some of the better behavior of married men.
Right now, Lisa's like, they're getting a little silly.
How much time do we have? Two segments left.
I do. Uno.
I'm getting comfortable. Dose.
We should go. What's the next show?
What, on After Us?
We'll just go live on the School Sucks live podcast after this. Have an after show.
Yeah, we could do that. I grab my computer.
5 seconds.
Okay, y'all ready?
Yep.
Yes, we are.
Cool.
Welcome back to 5 Live Radio on the Logos Radio Network. We're going to go to the next call. It's Uriah in Texas, and he has a wonderful question or observation about Dr. Strangelove. Let me hit the button here. Uriah, can you hear us?
Oh, yeah, I hear you fine. You hear me?
Yeah, what's your question?
Hey, you know, you were talking about movies and how they're coinciding with what's happening these days. You know, you're speaking about Idiocracy earlier and some other films and things like that. There was a film back in the 60s. It was a Stanley Kubrick film, and it's called Dr. Strangelove.
It is one of our favorites, so you had us at hello.
Or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the bomb, which most people did.
Yeah, so you know what it is? The premise was is the general was worried about his precious body of fluids because of fluoridation.
Such a crazy idea.
Yep.
Embedded in a very popular movie.
Yeah, I mean, there it is. He was speaking of fluoridation early on in many, many years ago, and now it's a relevant point.
Well, I think Kubrick had access to some of the Operation Paperclip ongoings, and he saw what was going on. And if you study his films, again, as a palette, look at all the films. The common theme in all his films is sociopaths or psychopaths and how other people are dealing or not dealing with those sociopaths and psychopaths. And so I feel very convincingly, I'm not saying it's my belief, but I've seen convincing evidence over a number of different documentaries that shows that he was trying to communicate something. As to what it might be he's communicating in totality, it remains to be unseen, but he brushed close with real power. And I think between 2001 Space Odyssey and Dr. Strangelove, he convinced the national security establishment that he could make very convincing pictures and make people feel feelings that, you know, these other kind of feelingless people wanted to project.
And it's ironic, too, because it was actually Dr. Strangelove that most likely put Kubrick on the map of these people, because I think it was a B-52.
It was high amount of detail that he replicated,
which no one had ever seen. No non-military personnel had ever seen the inside of a B-52. And you remember all those scenes in the film that take place with Slim Pickens there inside the B-52. So when the movie came out, and that's another thing, this movie came out in either 1963 or 1964, and it was less than 2 years after the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Kennedy assassination. So Kubrick was a real maverick, and this was a real bold project to put out that soon after, for many people, what was a pretty traumatizing couple of events.
Well, and there's also a doppelganger movie to that. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, Uriah, but there's a movie called Failsafe with Henry Fonda and the dude from I Dream of Jeannie. What's that guy's name, Brett?
The dude from I Dream of Jeannie. That's a great question.
Yeah, that's good. Someone's going to have to Google that. Larry Hagman. That's what my memory says. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but I think it's Larry Hagman. And it's a very serious version of the same story of the fail-safe system and what happens if a bomber goes and heads over Russia, how do we call it back, the sort of thing. And if I recall, I don't want to be a spoiler, but I think it had an unhappy ending. So whereas, you know, the ending of Dr. Strangelove is very ironic. Some people laugh at the end and not really realizing, you know, what it all means.
Right.
And, you know.
Yeah, comedy thing, but hey, one thing real quick, and then I have one more thing to add. You know, I'm 57, so during the 60s, I grew up all, you know, where we had to do the bomb drills in the hallway.
Sure.
And that's pretty funny as a child when you're going through that. And then, too, there was the whole Cuban Missile Crisis around the same time. And the other standard Kubrick film that was, I think, is relevant to today real quick, and I'll finish, was Clockwork Orange. Mm-hmm. Remember, the thug element became a police officer. Remember that?
Yeah.
What's happening to us right now is like this criminal element now is becoming the police.
Yeah, absolutely. And that seemed like a pretty foreign idea at the time. But, I mean, maybe they're not the violent people on the streets who are becoming the police. But there is this pathway that you see the military at one point, I think they've raised their standards again, to be fair, to our armed services. They've raised their standards again, but at one time, especially during the height of the Iraq War, the standards had dipped down, so they were letting in some undesirables. Well, after those people finished their service, they were in the front of the line to become police officers. So through the military, kind of as this supposed cleansing device for a criminal element to working their way into being police officers. So, yeah, it's very scary.
Or even last week, I saw footage of Jakari's action of the InfoWars Nightly News, and there was somebody getting busted outside. I think I showed this clip to you.
Yep.
And basically what you see is he's not in Afghanistan. He's not in Iraq. He's in Austin, Texas. And this is where they're using, you know, the same tactics that they would use to, you know, to overtake a house over there, overseas. The military tactics are being used. And common courtesies in a non-threatening situation. I mean, let's face it. Like we live in a culture of fear. There have been psychological warfare experiments going on through the media. The thing that Uriah had just mentioned about the, you know, hiding under the desks or having to, you know, hide in a hall for the drills that are going to protect you from a nuclear weapon. Right. That's all about instilling a fear culture. And if you go back even further, you have H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, the radio broadcast that made people think that aliens were landing at Grover's Mill in New Jersey and everyone should panic. And it was psychological warfare. How do people react to these types of things?
This is a test.
Right. Yeah. And so go ahead.
You sparked a memory a little earlier. You remember the young woman down there in was it Nebraska? Was it San Marcos? She was going to university down there, and she was walking by a police officer in broad daylight on the camp or near the campus, walking past. So this police officer freaks out, runs out there, and tosses this poor child to the ground. And he probably had 150 pounds on the poor kid and smashes her teeth out of her face. You know, it's just out of control.
Well, it is, and there's a lot of examples. There's the example of peaceful protesters being pepper sprayed. And you might think I'm talking about California. I might be talking about Turkey, right? Because that's going on. That's standard practice for people to be tased. Don't tase me, bro. I mean, people know what that means.
Yeah,
and they
it became
know
a joke.
They know the TSA, you know, two girls, one glove, right?
Yeah.
I mean, all these types of things have made it into our society, and it's an Orwellian society because the meaningful words that lead to cognitive liberty, that lead to autonomy, that lead to freedom, they're being obscured or occulted or hidden. And these other words that mean nothing are coming into our vernacular.
But they have that emotional power. And they provide a superficial explanation. And unfortunately, that's all that many people are looking for, you know, in the midst of their busy lives. So done. Let's move on. What's next? You know, or that's what they're saying.
Uriah, do you have a last question?
No, I'm just saying, hey, thanks for taking the call. And I really enjoyed listening to Larry Weiss last Wednesday. He's a pretty intelligent man himself. And I'd like to say to you all, once again, thanks for taking my call, and God bless everybody.
Hey, God bless you, Uriah.
Thanks, Uriah.
Yeah, I'd actually listened to the show from last week because I was listening through the guest hosts as well as listening to Cody and CJ's show, you know, just as a habit. And I was impressed. I was, you know, I didn't know what to expect, and I thought, wow, I can learn something from any of these people that I don't know yet, and then I can look further into their work, and, you know, you discover a little bit every day. So this is what I was discovering this morning and in the past week or so preparing for the show.
Absolutely.
We got about 1 minute left before we'll be back. We're not going on a break. We'll be back.
Yeah.
But before we went on this small break, I wanted to drop a couple sites for people to look up during the commercials. Where might people find you on, say, the Twitter, where you lay down some interesting information for them?
Oh, that's a great question. You can follow me on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Please do that. And the website, the main website, again, is schoolsucksproject.com. I follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, well, I don't like people to follow me on Twitter, but you can fly with me on Twitter because I'm a voluntarist. And so, you know, it says follow, but you don't have to, you know,
right.
You can change that word in your mind.
Yep.
To me, I just look at, you know, I look at it as laying down a trail of breadcrumbs of useful articles and publications that would otherwise go, you know, into the giant vacuum of the internet without being seen.
Mm.
So at Tragedy and Hope is the handle that I'm there, thereby. And, you know, then you can fly along, not behind.
Absolutely.
Fly beside.
We have a few seconds here. We each have YouTube channels, too.
Oh, YouTube/ Tragedy and Hope Mag. And Tragedy and Hope's named after a famous history book.
And you can find me on YouTube at School Sucks Podcast. You just search for that, and our channel will come up. If you want to subscribe, and I think you should, find the one that has the most subscribers, because there's a couple mirror channels, and I certainly encourage that. But the one that's most subscribers, that's us. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Somewhere by my Malcolm Park.
Welcome back to 5 Live Radio on the Logos Radio Network. I'm here with Brett Finott. My name is Richard Grove, and this, I believe, is the last segment that we'll have direct contact with you in the live format. But prior to the break, we were just laying out some of our URLs that'll be helpful if you find this interesting and would like to know more.
Yeah, absolutely. We still might have time to take a call or two. The number is 512-646-1984. We've had a couple good calls already. I'm glad we got to interact with some
Maybe we can
folks
talk about Brave New World, which is like the companion book. If you've read 1984, and that sounds, you know, like you've already read it, boring. Brave New World, very interesting. Tells you about eugenics and how there's no parents in their planned future. The kids are grown by the state. Specifically engineered using some of these techniques that the British and Americans had worked through the Nazi experiment and then brought home in Operation Paperclip and those sort of things. So very much, again, not a prophecy, but more like a business plan saying here's what they would like to do. And it gets adopted into culture. And now people use the term Brave New World. I've actually been to this very interesting bookstore down in Austin called Brave New Books.
Mm.
I was very impressed with Harlan's selection of books. It's like a personally chosen selection of books. And I found entire sections of the bookshelves where I was like, I either had all those books or I wanted all those books. So, you know, I brought a couple home and I hope to be back there soon to get a couple more. But yeah, it's a great selection and it's a great model. I'm surprised that it's not all over the country and you know, there's not one of these in every town, but I guess we just live at that part of American history where people haven't really realized what's going on yet and what a great resource books are.
Yeah.
Hard copy, non-Kindle, you know, books. Kindle sets fire to paper. It's very interesting. And so it's a Fahrenheit 451 joke that the people at Apple think they're clever about.
Right. Well, back to Brave New World for a second. You know, we're talking about the diminished role of the family, the invisibility almost of parents in raising children being grown by the state. This manifests in the real educational world as what was called values clarification. And some of the most famous critics of this were Charlotte Iserby, who we already mentioned, and a woman named Peg Luxick, who
if you happen to be
in front of the YouTube, you can go and check out a video called Who Controls Our Children? And it tells you all about how school basically took over the values education of children.
Well, she also tells you who took over the schools that took over the values. And it's the same foundations we were talking about earlier. These so-called New World Order foundations. Not to be confused with the H.G. Wells book of the same title, New World Order, 1939. So Peg Luxick, I believe she was a... It was a parents' meeting in Pennsylvania. I remember seeing the video and then including it in an episode of my podcast, The Peace Revolution. Did you include it in the School Sucks podcast?
I have included parts of it, and I actually devoted a whole show to discussing it. I believe it was called Outcome-Based Education, which is the term she uses. And what
similar to the Prussian education model.
Outcome-Based Education, Behaviorism in Disguise is the name of the episode, if people want to
search
for
it. Well, and that's how they're changing the behaviors, attitudes, and values of children that grow into later generations of voting citizens. And that is the definition of brainwashing.
Absolutely.
To change the attitudes, beliefs, values, and actions of young individuals who should not be sent out of the house without first learning how to discern fact from fiction to be able to tell when somebody's lying to you, because otherwise you're just exposing them to chaos and hoping for the best.
Right.
And I think we were all denied these tools growing up. And now that we kind of have an inkling that something exists, you know, I just find it interesting every day to explore further and further into the picture, because the media that we both create and that everyone on this network creates helps other people get a grasp on some of these topics that they don't have time to go out and do all the research to the degree that you can convince anybody.
Yeah.
They just need enough to be convinced themselves. They just need enough knowledge where they're going like, okay, now I can go to the next step. Okay, so who controls this and how do I get free of it? Because, again, I think it comes all back to personal liberty and you know, the individual aspects of personal liberty, which have been purposely hidden so that it's very useful to this non-elected ruling class that we hear so much about. And you know, they're becoming more and more invisible because they want to put technology as this layer between us and them. And they want to act as gods on this planet. And I don't think there's room for another God in the universe. I mean, there's a creator of this universe. There is intelligence. There is life in this universe. But it's being challenged every day by organized irrationality, by people who, I would refer to them as intraspecific kleptoparasites. These are people of the same species who choose not to produce on their own legitimately, but to plunder the production of others. And I think it's a recurring theme through history. And I think that we are finally at a point where we have access to the technology, access to the tools and things that we need to learn to make our lives satisfactory and satisfying and bring some serenity. Those are all things that we would like to have, right? To get those tools and put them in action and actually get something done before they slap this entire cybernetic grid, the door of it shut, metaphorically, because they are collecting immense amounts of data and they're processing it, but they need more. They need more input. And if we can prevent them from getting even more input, if we can prevent them from getting a smart meter on every house, if we can start to get people more educated and acting more in lines with their own survival and privacy in using Facebook, and if you're going to use these devices or these applications, know what the shortcomings are, limit your exposure, and use them in such a way that you can help install, or not install, but offer the opportunity to other individuals so that they can liberate their own minds, because you can't do it for anyone else, that you can't do their learning for them. I feel that our job is to just let people know where the credible evidence exists.
Yeah, to show people where doors are and open them, and, you know, what happens from there is up to them. But I think it's valuable once you understand, from my experience, I was in education for over a decade, and I saw a lot of these doors, walked through them, saw what was inside, was disturbed by a lot of it. And, I just want to point them out to other people.
Well, and you're not the first in history. I mean, Charlotte Iserby was in a similar situation. Mm-hmm. She was in the Department of Education under Reagan. John Taylor Gatto was an award-winning teacher from New York City and won the New York City and State School Teacher of the Year Award until he discovered, and decided to take action on the fact that he was being used to justify a broken system and make it look like it worked.
Yeah.
And he spent the next 20 years of his life writing books and touring the world and, sharing some of the wisdom that he had accrued through, when you investigate the roots of the education system, you're really investigating the roots of the people who have overtaken America in the last 150 years. And it is fascinating, but you can't really, I didn't get it on the first pass. I had to read his book 3 times to really let it sink in. But I also had to do a lot of work in the meantime, looking up names, finding context, organizing them into a meaningful, palette so that I could actually understand and maintain some comprehensive nature of the context. And that's where the understanding comes from. So I think as we each learn how to, we've been taught to read, and literacy is a form of slavery until we invoke critical thinking. So once we start asking questions and actually doing the work to start searching, I think that's where we unlimit our potential as human beings.
Yeah. So there once was this great divide in society between the literate and the illiterate, and today it is very much between the information literate and the information illiterate. And, I think that my experience from working in and around these schools is that administrators and teachers think they are, or they, at least they tell themselves a story about how they are protecting children from the dangerous Wild West of the internet, by controlling their searches and giving them specific websites to use. And what they're really doing is impeding their own process of discovery and their own opportunity to become more information literate by encountering, bad information.
Well, and there's a word. What does it mean when you're artificially held back from, the symptom is extended adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's a term to hold back. I think it might be to retard.
Yeah.
We are retarding our children artificially. It has nothing to do with birth defects or any of those other uses you might be socially familiar with. To hold back is the literal meaning of that. And the education system, from that definition, is antithetical to what we have all been told it's about. We think it's about educating individuals so that they can live a lively and prosperous, non-contradictory life where they're not violating the free will or volition of others.
Hmm.
And in fact, we have an education system that produces the exact opposite. And we're surprised at the chaos that has ensued. So that's why I think the real solution is learning to know yourself, gaining intellectual self-defense by grasping the tools that I've produced over the past 10 years, that Brett's been producing, that those similar to any other show on this network. Because it's not that any of us has the absolute solution. We all have a piece of the puzzle, but you can't put the whole puzzle together with one piece. So I see my job as go around looking at the different pieces and see how they fit together. And when you find useful pieces, you create media and you share them with other people. And then you store them on a website where other people can easily find them. In my case, that would be tragedyandhope.com. And in Brett's case, what's that URL you go by?
SchoolSucksProject.com.
And if you would like to know more, I would say I have a podcast called the Peace Revolution Podcast. The best way to wade into it, if there is a best way, is to start at the first episode and to slowly digest, you know, one episode a week. At a certain point, you'll notice they get longer. That's meant to eat up some of your habitual time so that you restructure your time in a way that's constructive to your life and brings more meaning.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're new to these ideas that we've been discussing tonight in terms of education versus schooling, I would also suggest you do the same thing with my podcast. And in fact, if you've enjoyed Rich and I and our conversation here tonight, I recommend checking us out tomorrow night. You can watch us live on schoolsucksproject.com/live. We do our own live show once a week. It is also open phones, usually open discussion, even though we do bring a topic to the table.
And it might be more exciting than what you heard tonight. It might be less exciting. Yeah. I don't know how you judge excitement. It would probably be a less structured show or a more structured show. What would you think, Brett?
You know, I think that these commercial breaks, they keep you honest. They keep you focused. Because we just do it. We just do it on Ustream, so we're in charge of, you know, when we take a break when we want. But this this format, I like the structure of this. I wouldn't mind doing this again.
Well, I thank you for joining me here in studio tonight in not-so-sunny East Hartford, Connecticut. It was a pleasure to sit in and guest host the 5 Live radio show. And I'd like to thank Cody and CJ for having a show that we could dip in on and hijack for the night.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Good night.